the following year. After the winter has fled from our bones, the only thing I know for sure is that I will love you even more, even more. And what will it bring, the spring of the following year? Will there be flowers to shower our hearts, vines to climb around our door? And will you love me
It's not just you. Sounding a little like Ray Davies of the Kinks. Welcome back to Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. He is one of our greatest singer-songwriters, multiple Juno Award winner. I don't know how many times he's been nominated. We'd be here for 20 minutes. I've gone through every nomination. His work is greatly admired by some of the biggest names in music, like Elvis Costello and Emmylou Harris, Sheryl Crow, Steve Earle, Elton John, Paul McCartney, Bob Dylan. He'll be performing at Le Studio, that is Jazz Fest Central on St. Catherine Street, next Tuesday, September 27th. More info and tickets at Evenko.ca or LeStudioTD.com. On Melnick in the Afternoon, Mitch Melnick, Andy Bettet, John Steele. Pleasure to welcome back Ron Sexsmith. How you doing?
Hey, Mitch. I'm doing well. Thanks.
Oh, it's always a treat to talk to you. Spring of the following year. It's a brand new album. The name of the album is Hermitage. I looked up the meaning of the word at Merriam-Webster. The dwelling of a hermit, especially when small and remote. Is this COVID inspired?
Well, you know, the album came out a month after we were, you know, April of 2020. So we were just, you know, into COVID, and I was still kind of in disbelief that it was happening, you know. But the album, I already had the album title, but, you know, from a year earlier. I guess because, you know, when I first moved to Stratford from Toronto, that was my plan, you know. I just told my wife, I don't want to meet anybody. I just want to be this recluse, you know. And it didn't really work out that way. So my original plan was to be a hermit.
John Still, you got hope. Ron Sexsmith, hermit. Okay, how long were you in Toronto? You're originally from St. Catharines. How many years did you spend in Toronto? Your fixture in Toronto, and why, I guess, was it to become, you wanted solitude to move to Stratford?
Well, I mean, I was there 30 years. That's a big chunk of my life. And it was really good, and until it wasn't, you know. I mean, the last, you know, maybe decade or so, I was feeling a bit, I don't know. I just felt like it was having a bad influence on me, and my wife was, you know, was getting a bit tired of Toronto. And the other thing is, we couldn't afford a house there, so, you know, we were in a sort of, you know, it was a very insecure feeling. Renting, you know, because we kept worrying, well, what if our landlord dies? Like, so anyway, we started looking outside of Toronto, and we found this. I mean, I was looking for sort of my Graceland, you know. I wanted a place that, if I had to move, I wanted it to kind of look like a rock star lived there or something. And so we found this house that I just loved, and Colleen's made it really funky, and so yeah. But it was all. You know, it wasn't very sustainable living in Toronto for us.
Stratford, you guys, yeah. I think most anybody, I remember school trips to Stratford. That's the first time I was exposed to Stratford. And if you're a theater student, you got to visit Stratford at some point. What else is there?
Well, we couldn't believe our luck, you know, when we first came here, because it's actually a pretty happening little town. You know, it's a food colony, and they do have the Shakespeare Festival. So we were, I don't know, we just felt like we'd found an oasis in a sort of crazy world. And I had put out a book the year we moved here, and I was trying to turn it into a musical, you know. So what better place to be? And I was meeting all these actors, and, you know, directors and stuff. But even during COVID, it was actually a pretty good place to be because, you know, I could walk the river every day and not really, you know, come close to anybody. And so anyway, it was my wife's idea, but it was the right idea. And she took some convincing. I was dragging my feet for a number of years.
So the fact that you ended up playing all the instruments, one of your heroes, I know McCartney has done that. Was that a result of where you ended up, or you were something you were planning to do?
No, I mean, before I moved to Stratford, I didn't have any of these songs. I wrote them pretty much the first year that we were here in 2017 because I didn't know anybody, and I was just, you know, I'd walk around the river and I guess just all the changes that I was experiencing created this sort of songwriting frenzy. It was actually my drummer, Don Kerr, who produced the record. It was his idea for me to do the sort of, you know, McCartney thing. Because I'd sent him these demos where I was singing on the piano and then I overdubbed some bass, and he thought, well, that might be a cool approach. He even wanted me to play drums originally, but, you know, it takes some coordination to play drums, which I don't have. So that's the only thing I didn't do on the album.
With acclaimed Canadian singer-songwriter Ron Sexsmith, Ron is hitting Le Studio TD next Tuesday. LeStudioTD.com is the website. You can also get more information and tickets at Avenco.ca. His latest album, now 2 years old, is called Hermitage. Is this a career-spanning show, or is it a chance for you to finally bring the newer songs alive?
It is a kind of a retrospective show. I think had I been able to tour in 2020, I probably would have done maybe seven or something from this album. Now I'm doing like three, I think. I also have a new album coming out in February, so I might play something from that too. But I try to play at least one or two from each record, and but it feels very personal, this show. I don't know why. It feels almost theatrical, and you know, it's the first sort of solo tour I've done in a long time.
Looking forward to it. Ron Sexsmith, I'm such a big Ron fan. I was part of Billy Bob Productions. We've discussed this before.
Yeah.
With original members Lloyd Fischler and Gary Silverman, we were asked to promote Ron's show at what used to be Club Zone and later Club One. It was about a 100-seat capacity, Lower Crescent. It was a basement club. And
yeah.
Ron had almost 200 people. I mean, it was insane. We were way above fire regulations. Mark LePage ended up interviewing Ron, I think, in the bathroom next to the stage. There was literally no room that night. It was just wild. But I am not the biggest Ron Sexsmith fan who speaks into a microphone. He is the voice of the Montreal Canadiens, Ron. Dan Robertson, who just announced on the show last week that he's moving on after 8 years. He's got himself a television gig. And as a parting gift, I said to Dan, we're going to be talking to one of your favorite singer-songwriters, Ron Sexsmith. Do you want to take part in the conversation?
Oh.
Dan Robertson, meet Ron Sexsmith.
I can't remember. Nice to meet you, Ron. I can't ever remember being this nervous in front of a microphone. So that just speaks to my admiration. And thanks, Mitch, for getting me in on this. I got hooked on your music from Blue Boy. That was my first album of yours in 2001. And then Retriever a little later. And one of my favorite albums of all time is Long Player, Late Bloomer, which is just a masterpiece. So thanks for all of that. And Mitch is talking about, you reminded me that you wrote a book a few years back. You're great on Twitter with your puns. They come quickly and often. There's the Ron Boy site on YouTube where you're playing lots of classic songs and you can play anything. And, of course, your albums. So I'm just wondering, is that just the creative person in you where you just have to get that stuff out in one form or another?
With Twitter, I don't even have a cell phone, and so I wasn't really interested in doing anything like that. But I think back in 2013, the label talked me into it. But I didn't really know what I was supposed to do with Twitter. But I'm always thinking of these stupid jokes, you know. And I'm a big fan of Groucho Marx and Jack Benny and all those people. So it just sort of became an outlet for that. And I wanted it to be a fun place, because Twitter can be sort of an angry place. And so now I feel it's almost like this extension of me. You know, it's just like variety show where I do sketches, I do songs, and it's really grown. And so that was all sort of unintended. But the puns and all that stuff I do on Twitter, it's just for me. It's just all writing. It's just another form of wordplay and, you know, brain exercises. And, you know, at some point I would like to get off all of, you know, all of that stuff. But yeah, as you know, people seem to, especially during COVID, I wanted to try to boost morale and lift people's spirits. So I sort of went into overdrive, I think.
If I can ask another one here,
of course,
Mitch,
keep going, Dan.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm on a bit of a roll now. So you mentioned, actually, Mitch mentioned off the top, Ray Davies. And I know that he's one of your big influences. And I don't know that he gets enough credit for what he did, actually, in helping start rock and roll, really, with the Kinks. But why Ray Davies? What early on spoke to you about him?
Well, before I discovered Ray, you know, I was into the whatever was on the radio, and I loved the Beatles, obviously, and I was a member of the Elton John fan club, actually, and I remember I was reading an interview with Pete Townsend, because I'd seen that movie Tommy, mostly I went because Elton John was in it, and then he was talking about Ray Davies, who I'd never heard of, and I don't know, I was in the car with my dad, and All Day and All the Night came on, and you know, and I was 15, but it felt like I was hearing it in 1965 or whenever it came out. It just sort of, there's something about, you know, the sound of his voice, and it was just a little bit off, you know, a little bit flat, a little bit awkward sounding that I could relate to. He was the songwriter that made me want to be a songwriter. Before that, I just wanted to be a singer, and, you know, and I've got to sing with Ray a few times now, and once in London and once in Toronto, which is just surreal because he really, you know, he's definitely in my DNA, his music, you know, more than, almost more than anybody. I mean, Gordon Lightfoot, you know, looms pretty large in my life too. And I've always sort of regarded my music as this sort of hybrid of Canadian folk music and the British invasion. So somewhere in there, it's where I exist, you know.
You mentioned Lightfoot. I remember you did your own version of Drifters, which I thought was excellent. That's going back a few years now. Gord's always said, basically in his lyrics, and I've heard him say it, that he'll play until he can't play anymore. If I had a dollar, if I had a cent, I would play most anywhere if it would pay my rent. Will that be you? Do you see that as you'll just keep going until you can't go anymore?
I certainly hope so. I mean, at the moment, I think I'm singing better than I ever have. Sometimes I wish I could go back and re-record my first bunch of records, but yeah, because it's I just love it so much, and it's also it's my contribution, you know. And I'm sure Lightfoot feels the same way. It's how he feels like he's making himself useful, you know, with the time he has left, and hopefully still has, you know, many years to go. But, you know, Dylan, all those guys, McCartney's out there, he's 80, he's still playing. So I don't think it's really anything you can give up or retire from. I think life makes that decision eventually. I mean, unless I can't sing or something, you know, I don't want to go on stage if I'm just ruining my own songs. But I'd like to do it as long as possible.
Finishing up with Ron Sexsmith heading this way next Tuesday at Le Studio, Jazz Fest Central on St. Catherine Street. We have a musician in studio with us, actually. He's not a full-time musician. John Still.
Hey, Ron. I didn't think we'd be talking so much about your Twitter account having you on here today, but one of the things I like the most is that I love just the understated way that you're saying, oh, here's a vinyl I'm just putting on, and here we go. And I like to pretend like I'm putting together some kind of record collection, nowhere near your own, but are there any albums specifically that you can remember either hitting you like a bolt of lightning or that you kind of still prefer to listen to even more so than any others?
I think there were different albums at different stages of my life, you know, and, you know, for me, one that stands out, because it was the first album that I paid with my own money. I used to cut people's lawns, you know, to buy records, and I went out and I bought Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy by Elton John, which I think had just come out that week. And so there was this feeling of pride of paying for my own record. And then, you know, that album had all the It came with a lyric book and a poster, so it was pretty exciting. And I still kind of do that when I buy an album. I listen to it, and I read the liner notes. But, you know, like I say, discovering Ray Davies, we were just talking about the Kinks. And I didn't know which album to buy, so I bought this record called Golden Hour of the Kinks, which was just sort of a compilation. And that totally changed my life. The first song was this beautiful song called Days that is probably still my favorite Kinks song. And it was just one of those where have you been all my life feelings. Like I felt, I just really connected with him. I think, you know, recently I've become a huge fan of Warren Zevon. And it's a similar feeling because I was always aware of him, but until just around the time he died, actually, I started investigating, and now he's sort of risen in the ranks of my favorite songwriters of all time.
Well, welcome to the club. Actually, less than 24 hours ago, Ron tweeted, my favorite album to listen to while I'm out mowing the lawn is Warren Zevon's My Rides Here. It rocks. Yeah. It's funny in places. It's sad in places, just like my lawn. Finishing up with Ron Sexsmith. Dan, you got one more?
Well, I'm just thinking, when you're talking about discovering artists like that, isn't that the greatest feeling? I mean, you think, okay, I'm onto this person, and they've got this catalog, and now I can go through it. And I'm thinking maybe you should change your YouTube site to Lawn Boy instead of Ron Boy. But see, there's the only pun that I have, Ron. I have to tell you.
Well, my alter ego I call is Lon Chaney when I'm cutting the grass.
I guess my last one would be, you mentioned earlier maybe you didn't like the sound of some of your early albums. Do you like the sound of your voice now in your late 50s more than you did in your early 20s?
Yeah, I think in the beginning I was so impressionable. And, you know, like with the first album, for example, I remember the producer told me he liked how I backphrased, you know, when you sort of, you're not on top of the beat all the time. And nobody had ever said anything like that to me. So when I hear that album, I just hear myself backphrasing all over the place, you know, trying to impress the producer. I think I would have sung it more straight now. But I just sort of whittled away at it because there were certain albums where I think my voice vibrated too much and other albums where I sounded like Kermit the Frog almost, trying to produce a rounder tone. So around the time of Retriever, I always consider Retriever one of my best records, and I think it's the first album where I was really happy with my singing. And I think I've sang pretty well since then. But, yeah, it just took a lot of, you know, trial and error. And you know, this last tour I just did over in the UK in March, I think, I don't know, I was just kind of, not to toot my own horn, but I just felt I was singing really well every night. And it's not always the case.
So to wrap this up, I asked Dan to choose his favorite Ron Sexsmith song, today anyway, and that you tell us about it, and we go out with it. Ahead of Ron hitting the stage at Le Studio TD, right downtown, Jazz Fest Central on St. Catherine Street, next Tuesday the 27th, go to evenco.ca or lestudiotd.com. It's always a treat listening to you. Thank you, Ron. Dan?
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, Ron, I chose Believe It When I See It from Long Player Late Bloomer. I like it. It makes you think, and I like how, I mean, it's a kind of a rockin' tune as well, and I think I have heard you talk about it in the past, but why don't you take us through your thought process in writing that song and how you feel that it came out when you were finished with it.
Well, you know, it's funny about that song because it was originally two separate songs. You know, the verse was one whole thing, and then the chorus, which was like the first time I sang the chorus to myself, I really felt like, oh, I think this is a hit song, which isn't, you know, I don't usually think that way very often. Somewhere along the line, I got the idea that I could put these two parts together. And, you know, and I think Bob Rock, who produced that album, he sort of heard it in a way, like, you know how David Bowie's song changes? The verse is kind of slow, and then or it's like a different kind of music, and then the chorus takes on this whole thing. That's how he wanted to approach it from a production standpoint. But it was really exciting hearing it coming through the speakers. Because even though it wasn't really, it didn't get much play over here in Canada, in the UK it got up to, I think, number 5 in the charts. And Another song on the album, Get in Line, got to number three. So it's the pretty much the only time in my career when I had, you know, two top 10 singles. But yeah, you know, the song, it's kind of a grumpy lyric, actually. But I think, you know, I like the juxtaposition when you have a sort of a downbeat lyric with a, you know, upbeat melody. And yeah, so it's I'm glad you liked the one. I was always quite proud of it.
I hope it sounds as good coming through the phone line, the non-cell phone line. My admiration for you just grew. The fact that you're a working musician without a cell phone. Looking forward to seeing you next Tuesday at La Studio. Thank you so much for this. Dan, if it doesn't work out for you, you know, I think music radio beckons.
Well, you know this business. It might not work out for me, Mitch, so I'll remember that.
Thanks an awful lot. Ron,
all right, thanks,
Dan.
Guys. Great talking
thank
to you.
You.
See you Tuesday. It's been producing beautiful music for 2.5 decades, 3 decades. Ron Sexsmith, don't miss him on stage at La Studio on St. Catherine Street West next Tuesday night.